This is Neil Boggs inviting you to Meet the Press. Our guest today on Meet the Press is Betty Furness, who was sworn in May 1st as President Johnson's Special Assistant for Consumer Affairs. Before her appointment, Ms. Furness was a radio television performer and reporter and a motion picture actress. We'll have the first questions now from Lawrence E. Spivak, permanent member of the Meet the Press panel.
Ms. Furness, after you were appointed by President Johnson, you said you wanted housewives to tell you what concerns them most. Now, based on what they've told you, what do you think concerns the consumer and the housewife most today?
Well, Mr. Spivak, I'm glad that you differentiated between consumer and housewife. The housewife is indeed a consumer, but I think at the outset it's important to realize that everyone is a consumer. The housewife is perhaps the most conspicuous consumer because she's in the stores every day, but in effect, everyone is a consumer, and I've heard not only from housewives, but from many other consumers. I think that frustration in the marketplace would have to be my overall answer to what bothers them. Now, this may be frustration in not being able to measure the contents or the price of one package against another, or it may be that they buy something and can't follow the instructions on it, or it may be that they buy a product that breaks down a lot faster than they think it ought to. There's a tremendous variety of complaints, some terribly small and specific, and others rather large and general.
Would you say that frustration bothers them more than the high cost of living? Do they complain to you about the high cost of living, what they have to pay for their food and things of that kind in the stores today?
I would say that if you wanted me actually to count the complaints, they might come out about half and half. Certainly, the high cost of living does bother the consumer. But so also does the fact that when she buys meat in a supermarket and it's pre-wrapped, that the best side is up and that she doesn't like the underneath side of the meat when she sees it when she gets home.
Ms. Furness, one way or another, every consumer is going to be affected by the president's tax increase if it is voted by Congress. Are you in favor of the increase?
I'm very much in favor of the increase, Mr. Spivak, for this reason. The tax increase, as you know, would not affect the very poor. Anyone making up to $5,000 a year would not have to pay this surcharge. For the average American consumer would have to pay 1 cent on the dollar. Now, that's not a great deal of money. The way the Council of Economic Advisers explains it to me, and I'm inclined to believe them, is that inflation within the next couple of years may really run out of bounds. And if it does, then the people who can least afford it are going to be most hurt. The poor, the elderly with fixed incomes, and anyone who works with a fixed income. Whereas the surcharge on the taxes would be a small surcharge. For example, I think what it comes down to is a choice of evils. Nobody wants taxes increased. We all appreciate that. But I do think that it makes more sense to pay 1 cent on the dollar than it does to perhaps have the consumer price index go up as much as 5% next year, which it might without the surtax.
Well, that's assuming that the increase in taxes is really going to have a serious effect on inflation, that it's going to really halt it. Great many economic experts believe that the consumer is going to get is a cut in his own purchasing dollar, because some one way or another the increase in taxes is going to affect him, and it's not going to affect inflation, so he's going to be hit two ways. Aren't they concerned about that?
Mr. Spivak, you got to take advice from the people you believe in, and I have talked at some length about this, and I do think that the surtax makes more sense. Now, of course, there is one enormous advantage to the surtax that I would like to point out. And that is that it can be voted away. When the war is over a couple of years from now, when it's no longer necessary, you can get rid of the surcharge on the taxes. You cannot vote inflation away. There's nothing you can do. As the costs spiral up, they tend to continue to do that. And on that basis alone, I think that the surcharge makes great sense.
Thank you, Ms. Furness. The other reporters on our panel today are Vera R. Glasser of the North American Newspaper Alliance, Paul Duke of NBC News, and Bonnie Angelo of Time Magazine. We'll continue the questions now with Mrs. Glasser.
Ms. Furness, the president recently appointed a consumer advisory council to work with you on recommendations for the consumer. This is the third such council that has been named, and the other two, as you may recall, went out of business after making a report, and very few of their recommendations were adopted. Do you think it's possible for this council, this new advisory council, to be effective?
Yes, I do, Mrs. Glasser. I think it's very important to get people of the caliber that are going to serve on this council to take their time and energies and intelligence to figure out areas where they think the consumer might be helped. I think we may perhaps do a different thing with the Consumer Advisory Council this time around. I believe that the chairman of the council, Louis Bronson La Follette, the Attorney General of Wisconsin, is going to suggest to the council that they might give their attention to two specific items that he thinks are of great concern. Now, this will not limit them to only concerning those items, but there are two that we feel are especially important, and we'd like to suggest that they concentrate on them.
Well, now, when you speak of the caliber of the council, I notice that one of the members of the so-called panel of experts is a Mrs. Charles W. Bailey of Austin, Texas, who happens to be the wife of of Mrs. Lucy Johnson Nugent's doctor. Now, how did this appointment, how was this appointment handled, Ms. Furness? Did this go from Lucy to the president, or did you clear it?
Well, I can't say what Lucy might have had to say about it. The reason that Mrs. Bailey was put on the council, these are people who are experts from various fields. We have teachers, economists, people who have dealt in the consumer field for a long time. We have a president of a union. We have a woman from the Watts area of Los Angeles thinking that she could offer something unique to the council. And we put Mrs. Bailey on as a housewife.
Well,
without previous experience having dealt with these problems, we thought that a fresh viewpoint could be very interesting in the council.
Well, as you know, that particular appointment raised criticism because it follows a somewhat similar appointment by the president who named to a $26,000 job on the Subversive Activities Control Board the husband of one of his secretaries. Now, do you consider it irregular to place personal friends in high federal office?
No, not if they qualify, not at all, because people in high office are bound to have friends who qualify.
Well, in other words, you as an administration official see nothing improper in expecting the consumer, in other words, the taxpayer, to pick up the tab on this kind of government by crony?
The taxpayer doesn't pay the Consumers Advisory Council. This is a group of people from out of the government who sits and advises. This woman is not on a salary as such.
Mr. Duke.
Ms. Furness, you have a small staff and a small operating fund. To really do an effective job in protecting the consumer, don't you need a much bigger staff and a great deal more money?
Well, Mr. Duke, anybody would love to have a bigger staff and a great deal more money. But I'll tell you what I can do. I can use other people's staff. And what I'm able to do in my office, because, for instance, we can't do research in depth, and many things that we might want to do, but I can suggest to the Department of Labor or HEW or the Department of Commerce, the Federal Trade Commission, that I'd like to see certain studies done. And they are equipped and set up to do these things. I think that very much an important part of my office is going to be the power of persuasion inside the government and out of the government. And I don't think I'll have trouble persuading people to assist me in areas in which they're already working anyway.
We have a Commerce Department to represent businessmen. We have a Labor Department to represent the working man. We have an Agriculture Department to represent the farmer. Do you think that we need, at the cabinet level, a Department of Consumer Affairs?
I don't think that we do need it at the cabinet level, and I'll tell you why. Every department that you have mentioned, and many more, pertain to the consumer interest. They all have areas that you would have to call consumer interest. Now, to pull all of those out and bring them together in one department would tear up some of those other agencies that are doing marvelous work anyway, and wouldn't necessarily accomplish any more. I think that an office such as mine, that does not have power of enforcement still can be effective. I have the president's ear, I can talk to Congress, I can talk to the various agencies, and I can talk for the consumer.
Miss Angelo.
Representative Lenore Sullivan, who's chairman of the House Subcommittee on Consumer Affairs, says that the outlook for passing most of the consumer legislation is grim. Why is it hard to pass legislation which protects the American citizen?
Well, Miss Angelo, a funny thing has happened. You know, in most of these bills that have been asked for, there's really no very little cost in administering them, so it's not money. I think that the consumer himself has to take on more responsibility, and I think that's a very important part of my job. Mrs. Sullivan told me that in her tremendously important bill on truth in lending, that she has had really a pathetically small amount of mail about it. Now, I haven't talked to anyone who is not in favor of the truth in lending bill, but the consumer doesn't seem to realize, one, that he is a consumer as such, and two, that he has a responsibility, and that he should let his Congress know what he wants. I don't think that, you know, the pressure groups, the lobbyists are pretty fast to get letters out, but the consumer doesn't yet see himself as his own lobby. And I think that the consumer should find out what these bills are and be more responsive than they are to Congress, and Congress in return will be responsive back to them.
Well, you speak of lobbyists and pressure groups. Are we to understand then that one reason that these bills have not gotten off the ground is that the industries and businesses affected are in effect pressuring both the White House and the Hill to water down the bills?
That is possible, and I'm sure it's true in some cases. In other cases, they just haven't gotten around to them yet. I'd love to tell you an anecdote, if I may, that they sent a couple of men over from HEW to talk to me about medical device standards, explaining to me that if you buy sunglasses in a drugstore, you may be buying prescription glasses without knowing that you were. That's the simplest explanation for that, because there are no standards for the grinding of the lenses in sunglasses. Much more seriously, there are no standards, for instance, in nails and pins that are put into broken joints in operations. And it is possible that a surgeon ready to insert the pin may say to his assistant, give me a number 3, and he'll get the number 3, and it's not the same size as number 3 was last week, because there are no standards for these devices. Well, I was appalled and asked to talk about this. I said, well, certainly I will. I'll be happy to get behind a bill like that, but tell me, who am I fighting? Who's against it? And they said, nobody's against it. It's just that nobody's for it. And that's the point. The consumer has to say what they want. And if they say it, they're just liable to get it.
Mr. Spivak.
Miss Furness, in what area do you think the consumer needs federal protection most today?
Well, I'm really very excited, Mr. Spivak, about the Truth in Lending bill. I think that's tremendously important. To give you an overall answer, I guess truth in promises would be my overall answer. But as far as legislation is concerned, I think the truth in lending is terribly important. People don't know how much money they're spending when they buy on time or when they borrow money. And all that bill will do is tell you how much it's costing you. A consumer today doesn't know how to shop for credit. Boy, do we know how to shop for cars and shoes and toys, but we don't know how to shop for credit. So that's really on my priority list.
You seem to be greatly concerned with the interest rates on installment buying. Are you also concerned with the amount of installment buying and the ease with which people obtain credit? Isn't that really one of your great problems?
Well, there's one area there that I must say bothers me personally a great deal. We all understand that much of our economy is dependent on being able to buy on credit. This is a new way of thinking to some of us older folks, but it's good and true and works and gives young people the advantage of having things earlier in life than perhaps we and our parents had them. But there's one thing I really don't like, and that is this new practice of issuing unsolicited credit cards. Now, I have been the unhappy receiver of a couple of these, and I don't approve. We don't let a man or a boy drive an automobile until he proves he can do it. And I don't think that people should use credit until they prove that they know what what it's all about.
Well,
and to receive a credit card in the mail and be able to go out and go on a buying drunk, I don't approve of.
How much difference is it going to make to a man who really needs credit badly? If he knows what he's going to pay for it, is that going to have much of an effect on him if he's charged the usurious interest, if he knows that he is being charged that interest?
Well, the difference is if he really needs the purchase or really feels that he wants it, he will then be able to shop for credit. And instead of paying 36 or 48%, and nobody seems to know that they pay that, but it's not uncommon to pay over 100%
interest. Are you in favor of a law that would limit the amount of credit that somebody could charge?
No.
I mean interest that someone could charge.
Oh, the amount of interest,
yes.
That's one of the areas that we're going to suggest the Consumer Advisory Council look into, which is the whole area of consumer credit after truth in lending is passed, assuming that that's the first necessary step. I can't answer you if I'm in favor of it because I haven't studied it deeply enough.
You wouldn't say now that you're in favor of a usury law. I mean, make it impossible for someone to charge more than a certain amount of interest.
Well, yeah, I'm in favor of it.
Mrs. Glasser.
Ms. Furness, now that the President has indicated that we're more or less on the threshold of inflation, as indeed some people say we are already experiencing it, are you giving any thought at all to price and wage controls?
I hope we don't come to that. Price and wage controls is a very unattractive and unappealing and unappetizing thing. Because as you indicate, if you control prices, you then have to control costs, you have to control wages, and nobody likes that.
But is any thought being given to it, Ms. Furness, either by you or the Council of Economic Advisers or the Treasury Department?
To answer you in a word, none.
Do you, when do you think that such consideration might be in order? You know, when we were in the Korean War, about 7 months, we imposed controls, and of course we have been more deeply involved for a longer period here. Would you have any idea when this should be considered?
Well, I don't think it's going to have to be considered. We're not in the same economical climate that we were then, and I would be astonished to see it considered at all, and I would be much more astonished to see it enacted.
Mr. Duke.
Ms. Furness, with prices rapidly going up, would you advocate consumer boycotts as did your predecessor, Ms. Peterson?
Well, Mr. Duke, I hate to correct a gentleman sitting over there, but Mrs. Peterson did not advocate consumer boycotts.
Well, if she didn't advocate them, she supported them.
The consumer boycotts were one of the happenings of last year. They occurred, they happened, and as sometimes happens with those things, once they start, they go. I don't believe that I would encourage boycotts, but on the other hand, I've got to tell you, I don't blame an individual feeling that they have no voice and no place to turn through frustration, banding together and saying, hey, help, is really what those women said. Now, something interesting came out of those boycotts last year. You know, I think the ladies who started them would be the first to admit that they were not effective in reducing prices over any period of time. But what they did do was very much what my job is. They started a dialogue between the supermarkets, the food people, and the consumer. And these dialogues are of the essence if business and the consumer are going to understand each other.
Well, now, talking about the supermarket, one leading authority said recently that the greatest swindles in the land today are taking place in the American supermarket because of deception and packaging and the offering of fraudulent products. Would you agree to that?
That sounds awfully broad to me. As you know, the truth in packaging law has been passed, so even as of today, you cannot buy a full quart or a jumbo quart. It doesn't exist anymore. The packaging is not all in the marketplace yet because it was only in July that the law became effective. But that will be taken care of. As far as fraudulent products are concerned, one hopes that over a period of time, people won't buy the second time.
Miss Angelo.
President Johnson has dealt at length with the need to protect the public's health. In view of the Public Health Service's many studies showing cigarettes to be the cause of death both from lung cancer and from heart disease, do you think there should be more controls over cigarette sales and advertising?
Well, We live in a free country, and I guess if people want to kill themselves, they're allowed to.
We don't feel that way about certain drugs.
That's quite true. I'm in a bad position to discuss this whole thing. I've never smoked. And so I'm not one of the people who wants to be let alone on this. I would like to see less people smoke. I do think it's very important to get the message out.
Would you?
Perhaps more restraints on advertising, perhaps more information to the public to make them really understand.
How would you feel about the proposal to have equal time on television and in radio for messages detailing the hazards of smoking, equal time with cigarette commercials?
Well, I don't know that I would necessarily want to make it equal time, and I haven't studied all the ramifications of that enough. I do know that the few spots I've seen on television suggesting that smoking isn't such a hot idea, I think have been marvelous, and I only hope that they'll be effective. Have you tried to stop a teenager from starting to smoke?
Murder.
Just murder.
in another area, there have been reports that in some stores in the ghettos, the prices go up on the day welfare checks come out. Is that true?
It has been said so often that it has been accepted as true. I have not seen any concrete evidence to establish this. Now, as of a recent accusation here in Washington, the Federal Trade Commission is going to run a study in depth on that to see if it really is true. If it's true, it is, of course, appalling and must be stopped.
We have less than 3 minutes, Mr. Spivak.
Miss Furness, Ralph Nader, who kicked up the storm in the automobile industry, said that your appointment, and I quote, deludes the public into thinking they have a voice in the White House when they really don't. Can you tell us what power you have, really, to get things done for the consumer?
Well, the power I have, as I said, Mr. Spivak, is the power of persuasion. I've got one very important thing. I have the president's ear. And I can tell the president anything that I think he ought to know about consumer problems. It doesn't seem to me that the president would have appointed me to this position if he wanted to downgrade the job, because it has been, shall we say, a reasonably conspicuous appointment. And I think people are beginning to realize that there is somebody they could tell their
troubles to.
There
are some stories to the effect that the appointment of you was pure window dressing on the president's part to mask White House indifference to consumers' needs. And I'm just quoting what
Supermarket
News said.
I don't think that makes any sense at all, because if he really wanted to lose this job, he had only to give it to someone whose name had never been heard before. And, you know, she'd call and say, this is Mrs. Smith, and they'd say, what, Mrs. Smith? You know, if I say this is Betty Furness, I got to tell you everybody knows who that is today.
Now, why don't you want any executive power so that you can do something beyond just persuading people?
I don't think I need it, Mr. Spivak. Now, perhaps a year from now, I might change my mind. At this time, I don't believe I need it. The president, I had a meeting recently with presidents of voluntary organizations from all over the country. And when the president greeted them in the Rose Garden, he said to them, look, we need your help. Now, you know what the problems are. You tell Betty. Betty will tell me, and I'll tell the Congress.
Well, what do you think you've accomplished thus far for the consumer? What do you consider the most important thing you've done thus far?
Well, I have tried to further the president's legislative program by testifying where I could. I'd been on the job 3 days when I testified on the Flammable Fabrics Act. I have worked within the government with the various secretaries discussing consumer problems and what we can do to coordinate them within the government. I have met with organizations out of the government, and I have started now to do a considerable amount of traveling to go out and really meet the consumer. I want to meet him at home and not just through the mail.
And with that, our time is up. Thank you, Ms. Furness, for being with us today on Meet the Press. I'll tell you about next week's guest on Meet the Press after this message.
For a printed copy of today's interview, send 10 cents in coin and a stamp, self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, Box 2111, Washington, D.C., 20013. That's Merkle Press, Box 2111, Washington, D.C., 20013.
Next week on Meet the Press, our guest will be Republican Governor George Romney of Michigan. Now this is Neil Boggs saying goodbye for Betty Furness and Meet the Press.
The Federal Bar Association reminds us that freedom depends on the rule of law. The law protects you. Respect it. Uphold it. Obey it. and here to help promote respect for the law and for those who enforce it is Mr. Alfred R. Pierce, mayor of the city of Camden, New Jersey.
No group, no club or association can exist without rules and regulations. When you break the rules and regulations, you won't have a club or an association or a group can last very long. Government also needs rules and regulations. We call this law. This is how you maintain a society, so that laws can protect people. That's what laws are for, protection of people. When the people don't have respect for law and order, the people are really tearing down themselves, because government is not a building. It's not a thing that you can place your hand upon. Government is an organization designed to carry on the wishes of the people who really control it. It's essential that we all respect law and order. Won't you do your part?
You have just heard, pre-recorded, Mr. Alfred R. Pierce, mayor of the city of Camden, speaking in behalf of the Federal Bar Association in support of its Law Observance Program. You're often told that to get ahead in this world, you have to be willing to work hard. It's pretty much a fact of life. But that's not all it takes. You can't work very hard if you don't have a job. And today, to get a good job, you need a good education. So if you're in school, stay there and learn all you can. At some point in school, you might say, how will this subject ever help me? Well, maybe that particular subject won't be of much use to you. But are you going to blow your whole education over one or two subjects that don't seem very important? Today, to get a good job, you're going to need a good education. Stay in school while you have the chance. Join us each Sunday for News in the Making as the nation's top reporters put challenging questions to world leaders on Meet the Press, America's press conference of the air.
Hi, this is Pee Wee Reese reminding you that for radio and TV coverage of the 1967 World Series, your dial is set right here on NBC.